I couldn't leave a message. Too risky. I'd have to keep calling back. But if she didn't answer tonight, if she still didn't answer tomorrow... I hated myself for feeling the first prick of tears. I would not cry for her. She didn't deserve it.
Thomas Dickerson speaking.
The man's voice on the other end of the line startled me. Yes, is Savannah there? I adopted the same deep voice as before.
Who?
I repeated my mom's name.
I'm sorry, you must have the wrong number.
I double-checked the number. I'd entered it correctly.
I don't know anyone named Savannah, he added.
I couldn't believe it. Sandy had given me a fake. I should have seen it coming. Hanging up, I immediately turned off the phone and tossed it into one of the barrel trash cans. I hoisted myself back into the scout, feeling duped. I had a list of choice names for Sandy running through my head. Now I was going to have to think up a new way to reach my mom. I feared I was running out of time. She wouldn't be able to evade Danny's men for long, especially if she was high, which would impair any reasoning she had left at this point. I had to tell Carmina. Handling this on my own was out of the question. I was in over my head. When Chet came back, I'd explain that something urgent had come up and I needed to go home. Carmina would call Price, and they'd organize a team to go after my mom. It was my final thought before the door was wrenched open from the outside. I had one shoulder braced against it and nearly tumbled out. Catching myself from falling, I found myself face to face with Trigger McClure.
Hey there, little lady, he said in a voice that was honey on the surface and black ice beneath. A ruddy glow stained his cheeks and his eyes were slightly glazed. A beer bottle dangled from his fingers.
Stay away from me, Trigger.
He tipped the bottle to his lips.
Nah, I don't think so.
Then I'm going to get out of this car and I'm going to kick your ass.
Flipping his palms up, he said,
No harm here. I just want to talk.
Talk? Are you kid?
I'm not finished. It's my turn. Then it's yours. That's the way this works.
The way this works is I'm about to shove my fist into your jaw.
To show it wasn't an empty threat, I rammed my foot into his leg, knocking him off balance. There was a flash of anger in his eyes, immediately controlled. A sloppy smile bowed his mouth.
I finally figured out where I know you from. Why you look so familiar. The pictures. Baseball camp. You were his girlfriend. He had lots of pictures of you. You look different now. It's why I didn't recognize you right away.
What?
Baseball camp. 2 summers ago, I bunked with your boyfriend, Reed Winslow.
Like I'd gotten a punch to the stomach, I felt the wind go out of me. I stared open-mouthed at Trigger, a flush of surprise and shock creeping up my neck. He knew Reed? Could he be the jackass roommate Reed had complained about? Was that why Trigger had seemed so familiar the first time I saw him? Because Reed had shown me pictures from baseball camp?
Yes.
Trigger had figured it out before me. Pulling myself together, I pinned him with the most ludicrous and outlandish glare I could muster.
I don't know what you're talking about. Reed wasn't half bad, at baseball or as a roommate.
He bounced his shoulders.
I meant to keep in touch. Never did. How is good old Reed? The two of you still? Nah, couldn't be. You're giving it up to Chet Falconer these days.
Before I could tell him what I thought of his asinine and tasteless speculations, he continued conversationally.
The Phillies were Reed's favorite team, because he was from Philadelphia.
He spoke with an accent, kind of like the New York accents you hear on TV, but not quite.
You have the same accent.
Looking pale, Stella. Can I offer you a drink? he asked, feigning concern as he touched my shoulder as though to steady me. I slapped his hand away.
What's a girl from Philadelphia doing all the way out here in Thunder Basin? Is that part of your big secret?
I snapped my head up.
I'm in the system, you idiot. I'm a foster kid. Yeah, I came from Philly, so what?
Foster kid?
He shook his head in disagreement.
That's not how I remember it. I distinctly remember Reed saying you came from money. Your mother was one of his best clients. She had a nasty habit.
Yeah, I know about that.
Sure you don't want a drink? You look like you could use one.
No?
I suppose that makes sense. Scared of turning out like your mom, isn't that right? A drunk and an addict?
They say addiction can be passed down. It's genetic.
But let's not get off on tangents. You're no more a foster kid than I am.
Unless, of course, your mom overdosed and kicked the can. But then you'd be living with family now. That rich extended family of yours.
So what are you really doing here?
He grilled me. What's a privileged rich girl like you doing in my little corner of the world?
What did you say about my mom?
My voice was shaking, with anger or fear I couldn't say.
Oh,
he showed the whites of his eyes.
You didn't know? Well, now I feel like a piece of crap. It isn't my place to tell you Reed was dealing your mom OxyContin. He specialized in the stuff. Was quite the businessman at camp. Selling it to the other players, bragged that he made enough at camp to earn back what he'd paid in registration fees, bragged about how he was saving up to buy his own place. He was gonna move out of his parents' house and live with his girl.
His eyes zeroed in on mine.
You.
Lies. Trigger was telling lies. I knew Reed. I'd spent 2 years of my life in love with him. During those 2 years, there was no one in the world I was closer to. I would have known if he was dealing. I'd confessed to him my mom's addiction, and he'd been so sympathetic and understanding. He'd had my back. He'd loved me. There was no way he was dealing. There would have been signs. All those nights I'd come home to find him at my house, he'd been waiting for me. I refused to even consider the possibility he'd been there for her. The night Danny Bilondo beat him with a tire iron, Reed had been at my house, waiting for me. He wasn't there to sell my mom OxyContin. But it was her favorite. It, and heroin, which Danny supplied. One dealer for OxyContin, and one for heroin.
No. Oh, God, please, no.
I knew Reed's mom had taken OxyContin to manage the pain from fibromyalgia, but now it was looking like he'd either sold off some of her supply or at least discovered what the drug was capable of by watching her abuse it. How could he have hurt me this way? Tears welled in my eyes, but I refused to blink, afraid it would set them free. Trigger leaned close, reeking of alcohol, his voice hushed with secrecy.
Don't worry, darling. Your secret's safe with me. Fact. I think I'll stop looking into your past altogether.
Your secrets don't pique my interest in the least. I mean, you've given me no reason to want to hurt you. Have you?
Let your pretty little head think on that.
His eyes hardened.
That's right, Stella. I always win.
I was trembling. The wind had picked up, cooling the air, but my chill came from inside. Secrets were starting to unravel, and I'd been selfish enough, self-absorbed enough, to think I was the only one keeping them. How could she? How could he? I must have looked like such a fool to both of them. Stupid, gullible, blind. My shock was starting to crumble, replaced by surging betrayal and humiliation. They'd worked behind my back. Reed wasn't my ally. He was her dealer. Had he used me to get close to her? Or had he actually liked me first, and her addiction had been a fringe benefit, an opportunity to seize?
Thunder clapped and I jumped in my seat. The world had grown so dark, so suddenly. A gust of icy wind whipped through the open windows, but a hot, queasy feeling roiled in my stomach. I wanted to push past Trigger and run. I wanted to run and run, but there was no escaping the truth. A startled exclamation from Trigger jerked my attention back to him. He stumbled sideways, trying to catch his footing. Chet stood behind him, his dark hair blowing wildly in the wind. His eyes were cold and hard, his face outlined by flashes of lightning.
"Touch me again and I'll break your hand," Trigger snarled, drawing up to full height.
The two were equal in size, but there was a severity to Chet's eyes that made him look far more frightening.
"I told you to stay away from her."
"It's a free country. I can talk to whoever I want," Trigger drawled.
"True," Chet agreed, his jaw clamped tightly. "But there's a difference between talking and harassing, and having to explain it to you is testing my patience. We had an understanding, you and I. You and Stella are finished. You don't approach her, you don't look at her, you don't so much as think her name. When she's in the room, you make yourself disappear. As far as she's concerned, you don't exist."
"I'm not real keen on threats," Trigger sneered.
Before I knew what was happening, Chet slammed his knuckles into Trigger's jaw. Another brutal punch to the ribs left Trigger howling. Trigger swung his fist wildly at Chet, who turned to the side, dodging the blow, then grabbed Trigger's arm and struck his elbow joint. Chet finished his assault with a strike to Trigger's nose, taking him down.
"What the hell's wrong with you?" Trigger blubbered, scrambling to get up. "Stay down," Chet barked. "You get up, I'll hit you again." "I'll have you arrested," Trigger growled, but he stayed on his haunches. "You do that. Tell the police how you got your ass kicked. I'd love to see that in the report. Of course, you'll want to wait until morning to squeal, after you've sobered up. Cops are touchy about underage drinking. But that's going to raise more questions like why you waited. Not to mention the bad press. I bet pro scouts like a guy with a temper. A guy who's hard to control. A guy with loose fists."
"More threats?" Trigger spat, his face as dark as the thunderclouds overhead.
"I'm helping you see your options. These things always play out one of two ways, the hard way or the easy way. You pick. You think there's a chance in hell I'll take the easy way? Let you intimidate me?"
Chet laughed softly and wiped his bright red knuckles on his jeans as though dusting them off for round two.
"I hope you choose the hard way. I'm just getting started. You must have a death wish, you crazy son of a..." "Not crazy. Angry. I've got more unresolved anger than you can imagine. Hitting you is helping to release it. So tempt me, Trigger. Get back up and give me what I want."
Something changed in Trigger's face, as if he'd figured out Chet wasn't bluffing. He inched backward. He held a hand out, signaling Chet to keep his distance. His other hand cradled his jaw, which glowed violet with a fresh bruise.
"Your girlfriend isn't who you think," Trigger said, pointing accusingly at me. "The foster kid story is a cover. She's got a mom, a strung-out mom in Philadelphia. And that's only one of her secrets. I'm digging. I'll find more. Something about her just ain't right." "When I'm finished here, people will say the same about you," Chet said, advancing toward him. "Ain't you listening?" Trigger yelped, scrabbling away. "I just told you your girlfriend is lying to you, to all of us." "So she's got a few secrets, does she? What the hell does it matter to you?"
Chet leaped to my defense, but I could hear an underlying pain in his voice. It hurt him to know Trigger was right. I'd lied to him, and while he apparently wasn't going to hold it against me, he wasn't ready to forget either. His eyes flashed.
"Why does she matter so much to you? Why can't you leave her alone?"
"All right, man, calm down. I'll stay away from her."
You'll give her every opportunity to forget you exist.
Yeah, yeah, that too. Whatever, man.
She won't see you again.
Not on account of me.
Trigger backed up cautiously, making no sudden movements.
I'm leaving now. Just stay away from me, you hear?
As soon as he was a safe distance from Chet, Trigger turned and limped hurriedly away. Chet and I ducked out of the gale force winds, shutting ourselves inside the scout. But the wind was blowing so hard, even after we'd rolled up the windows, it continued to rock the car. Chet shook his fist, flexing his fingers.
Been a while since I hit someone. Forgot how much it hurts.
Why did you hit him? It was so... I searched for the word. It was so... unlike Chet.
He beat you up at the sundown, didn't he? He was your attacker, he said quietly.
I swallowed. Chet...
You didn't tell me. You knew, but you kept it from me.
I was scared you'd go after him. I was scared of seeing you in trouble. I didn't want Trigger to be the cause of a black mark on your record. Or worse.
Yeah? His eyes turned fiery. Well, I'm scared of seeing you in trouble. It kills me to think of him hurting you. Nobody, not Trigger, not anyone, touches you that way. You were bruised and broken, Stella, he said, his voice climbing. How could that not affect me? How could I not go after him? When you love someone, you look out for them. You fight their battles.
I frowned. I don't need you to fight my battles. I'm not a fragile little girl. I can take care of myself.
His head cocked as he scrutinized me. You're angry that I hit him.
No.
Like hell you're not.
Take me home. I said it with my face to the glass, not looking at him.
Now I get the cold shoulder?
I said, take me home, I said through my teeth.
Tell me why you're pissed. That I can deal with. The cold shoulder? Silent treatment? I've lived with a guy the last year, Stella. I don't do passive-aggressive. Tell me what you're thinking. Don't punish me with silence. Don't treat me like I'm one of your girlfriends.
You condescending bastard.
Tell me what's bothering you, he said, louder than before.
Tears of rage stung my eyes. I wanted to tell him I resented him for thinking I was weak. I'd been looking out for myself for years. He had no idea what I'd been through or how strong I was. But most of all, it scared me to think he was falling in love with me. I wasn't going to let him fight my battles only to leave him. It wasn't fair. It was a cowardly thing to do, and I was done being a coward. Leaving him would be easier if I didn't have to deal with knowing he loved me. He tried again.
You're pissed that I fought over you. You don't like male aggression or violence. Did someone hurt you? Someone in your past? Is that it?
I turned on him, furious.
Shut up, Chet. Just shut up.
At the sight of my face, he stopped abruptly.
What's wrong? Damn it, just tell me. I won't fight anymore if that's what you want. I just need to understand you.
Plowing my hands through my hair, I tried to calm my thumping heart. I wanted to tell Chet the truth. It hovered on the edge just like my tears. I could tell him. It would feel so good to be honest with him, to have someone to share my burden, to open the floodgates and finally be free of these toxic secrets. But telling him the truth would only give me momentary relief. It wouldn't solve my problems. In fact, it would compound them, and it would entangle Chet in a web of danger that wasn't of his making. So I locked down my pain and ordered myself to swallow the words I desperately wanted to get out. Sitting stiffly, Chet spoke first, his voice flat.
Fine. I'll take you home.
I found Carmina in the backyard, latching the storm shutters while tumbleweeds and leaves pelted the house.
Bad feeling in the air, she called over her shoulders as I ran to help. This storm isn't holding back.
She saw my face.
What on earth's the matter, Stella?
Even though I wished I didn't have to tell her, I didn't see an option. Between doing what I wanted and doing the smart thing, there was only one answer. So I told her that Trigger had figured out I was from Philadelphia. Then I told her my mom had left rehab. She didn't ask how Trigger had pieced together my past or how I'd gotten the clinic's number. She immediately went in and called Deputy Price. Trigger's discovery was a threat to my safety. A minor one, but he would keep digging. Eventually, he might find something that could genuinely endanger me. I wasn't safe here anymore. I was leaving Thunder Basin. That night, I listened to the storm howl and rage. Gusting air lashed the window panes and hail bombarded the roof. From my bedroom window, I watched the frozen pellets paint the lawn white and turn the road to ice. The world was so dark, it took flashes of lightning to illuminate the landscape. Cattle and horses had vanished from the pastures, and prairie grass flapped like the waves of an angry sea. The wild tempest mimicked my own raging heart. I thought of my secrets, trapped there, dashing themselves like wild birds to get out. Even now I felt them overcoming me, and I wondered where Estella's vicious strength had gone. Months ago, I'd made the decision to lie to the authorities. I'd told the detectives the story I wanted them to believe. Even if I hadn't fully realized what I was doing, I'd trusted myself to be strong. I'd promised myself I'd guard my secrets until I died. I did not know they would kill me. The violent thrashing outside made my ears ache, and at last I put my headphones on. But tonight, the throbbing, guitar-heavy music of Nathaniel's cassette tapes didn't distract me. The next morning, the sky was a brilliant shade of sapphire. Trash and branches littered the yard, and puddles of mud pocked the road, but they were the only evidence of last night's storm. Birds sang merrily, and the dew on the grass caught the morning sun. The air was calm, enveloping my shoulders like a warm, thick shawl. A note on the kitchen counter told me Carmina had gone to the grocery store for milk, but I wasn't fooled. She was buying food for my trip. I imagined crusty sourdough rolls, roast beef, cheese, and chips would find their way into a brown paper sack with my name on it. In Carmina's mind, nothing was worth doing without food, especially meat, potatoes, and bread. Deputy Price was scheduled to arrive tomorrow night to transport me to my new living quarters. This time, I was determined not to resent him for it. It was his job. My job was to let him keep me safe. End of story. No attitude this time, and no longing to stay where I could not. To prove my point, I reminded myself I would have been leaving Thunder Basin in a couple of weeks anyway. So what if the date had been pushed up? Get over it. I inhaled deeply. I would not think about tomorrow. I had nearly 36 hours left in Thunder Basin, and I wanted to make the most of them. Chin up, be brave. That was my strategy. But deep down, I was scared of so many things. Of leaving this place I'd learned to love, of breaking Chet's heart, of letting go of Carmina, of facing the world without both of them. I didn't want or know how to say goodbye. Maybe it was better this way. When Deputy Price came for me, there wouldn't be time for a sappy, drawn-out farewell. We'd have to keep things quick, tidy. I'd be in the car, Thunder Basin miles behind me before the loss and heartache hit. I'd deal with it alone, like I always had. Outside, I fingered the petunias in Carmina's whiskey barrels. I drank in their fragrance, searing it to memory. I ran my bare feet over her warm grass. I felt the sun on my face and listened to the sweet, friendly song of the meadowlarks. I was padding barefoot up the drive, sifting through the morning mail, when I heard tires chew the road behind me. Sunlight glinted off the car's windshield as it pulled into the drive. The driver swung out, shielding her eyes as she sized up the white clapboard house. She wore a floral dress, cleaned, ironed, and sandals. Her soft brown hair swung over her shoulders. It was freshly washed and full of bounce. The hollow look in the woman's eyes was gone. When her gaze came to rest on me, I saw an eagerness, a brightness that whirled me into the past,
Mom? I said, stunned.
Baby doll.
She sashayed toward me, her arms stretched wide. The next thing I knew, I was smashed against her chest.
Oh, honey, your mama's missed you.
I detached myself. What are you doing here? She pinched my cheek.
Is that any way to greet your mama? Let me have a look at you.
She held me by the shoulders, her eyes drinking me in.
I can't believe how dark you are.
I see how it is. Me cooped up under fluorescent lights all summer while you're out here sunbathing. She clucked her tongue. Hardly seems fair. I just stared at her. Seeing her here washed and sober, it didn't seem real.
Well, she said, plopping herself down in Carmina's porch swing and crossing her slender legs prettily. Tell me about your summer. Tell me everything.
She glanced around the yard with a smirk.
I'm impressed you lasted as long as you have. What do people do for fun around here anyway?
How did you find me? She let out a hoot.
How do you think? I'm your mother. Those feds had to tell me where they were keeping you. I demanded to know right from the start. Did you think I'd let them drag you off and hide you without my knowing?
I called the rehab center. They said you checked out. I thought,
surprise, she said, throwing her hands up and wriggling her fingers. I checked out early. What kind of boring sus would I be if I told you I was coming? I wanted to surprise you. Anyway, don't worry a thing about me. I'm clean. My whole outlook has changed. Much as I hated that place, she wrinkled her nose, I'll be the first to admit it was what I needed.
You were right, sweet baby girl. I needed help.
Well, I got it.
This is our chance to start fresh. A do-over.
Things are going to be different this time, Stella.
Stella, I corrected automatically. But she was right. Things were different. Way different. Who was this overly affectionate woman? 2 years ago, my mom had taken a path that led her straight to the intersection of depressed and strung out. It was hard to remember her as anything but lost, disinterested, and intentionally or not, very cold and indifferent toward me. She flapped a hand dismissively.
You're Estella to me, and I'm Mama to you.
The feds and their documents don't change that.
What are you doing here? I repeated, still dazed.
Would you stop asking that? Makes me feel unwelcome.
You don't have to stay here anymore, baby girl. We're done with this place. I came to pick you up. It's me and you again. We're going to buy a house, get jobs, put down roots.
Oh, we'll miss Philly, but we'll find something almost as good.
I know you love Boston.
Her tone was rosy, full of hope. Just a hop, skip, and a jump away from our old life. Now tell me you don't like the sound of that.
Boston, I echoed. That's right, sweetheart. We're moving to Boston.
Stunned, I found myself unable to draw up a response. Before I could draft one, Carmina's truck rounded the drive. She braked at my mom's car, clearly not expecting it, then backed up and parked alongside it. I didn't know what it said that my first reaction upon seeing her was sweeping nervousness, a strange tingle in my bones of wanting to step away from my mom, to disassociate myself from her. I'm ashamed of her, I realized. I felt uneasy at the thought of introducing her to Carmina. I didn't know how to explain what she was doing here. Carmina hadn't planned for this. She didn't like surprises. Carmina hopped out, her red boots landing solidly on the drive. She looked between me and my mom, and her face changed. It grew watchful. I guessed she saw a resemblance because her first words were, "You must be Savannah."
"That's right. And you are?"
It seemed to me that my mom's voice was unnecessarily cool, and I cast a quick glance of apology at Carmina.
"Carmina Songster. Welcome to Thunder Basin.
I'm here to pick up Stella. This shouldn't take long. Stella, darling, why don't you go on inside? Pack your bags. I eyed Carmina, whose expression was unflappable.
I wasn't aware you were coming to fetch Stella today, she said.
I wasn't aware I needed your permission, my mom returned, her voice tainted with something subtle. Resentment, perhaps.
Permission? Heavens, no. Not from me, anyway. You're her legal guardian.
I'm her mother.
Yes, of course. I wonder, though, Carmina mused patiently. Have you thought this through? If you take Stella from Thunder Basin, you'll have to notify the U.S. Marshals Service. They need to keep tabs on her, since she's agreed to testify for the prosecution. This was all explained in the contract you signed with the Marshals upon entering WITSEC.
I don't need to tell them anything, my mom said loftily. The program is voluntary. We can leave witness protection at any point. If Estella and I go, they can't tell us what to do.
Would you do that?
Carmina asked, her voice still measured.
Would you put Stella in that kind of danger? If you leave, you'll have to return to your old identities. The U.S. Marshals will no longer be responsible for your safety. I know you want your old life back, but it's no longer safe. It isn't an option. I know moving on is hard, but you have to try. You need to think about your daughter now, what she needs.
I know how to keep my daughter safe, my mom said, clutching my shoulders protectively. I'm not taking her back to Philadelphia.
You're making a mistake, Carmina told her bluntly.
Go on, Stella, my mom repeated more firmly, her eyes flaring as they locked with Carmina's. Our flight leaves at noon. You bought tickets? Panic seemed to close my throat. She was really going through with this. What about rehab? She was clean now, but how long would it last? Would she even make it to Boston before relapsing? You still have weeks of rehab left, I said. I told you I'm clean, she said, flustered and irritated. That southern charm was chipping away, revealing the anxious, defensive woman I remembered. I always said I'd quit when I was ready, and I've quit. Now get your bags. We don't have a lot of time. I suddenly feared I wouldn't have time to say goodbye to Chet, to Innie and Dixie Joe. I couldn't go without letting them know how much they meant to me. How could I leave Chet without apologizing for last night, without setting things right? This wasn't how I wanted to remember him, hurt and frustrated while I shut him out. It wasn't fair to him. It made me ache just thinking about it.
Why don't you come in and I'll make you both breakfast, Carmina suggested to my mom. You can't travel on an empty stomach. Have you eaten, Stella? She asked me before my mom could reject the offer.
I shook my head no, grateful for the opportunity to slow time. Everything felt rushed. How many nights had I lain awake in my cramped bedroom upstairs, counting down the days until I was back on the East Coast, surrounded by strangers in a city brimming with energy and opportunity? I'd dreamed of returning to Estella's life, but that was a fantasy, a secret wish you kept inside because it didn't belong in the real world. I couldn't go back, and I couldn't leave WITSEC, but I also couldn't abandon my mom. Carmina makes the best breakfast, I told my mom. Pancakes and eggs and bacon. It won't take long. I had coffee on the drive, she answered brusquely. At my fallen face, she sighed impatiently. A couple minutes, Stella. Then we really need to go. Carmina showed my mom to the downstairs powder room to freshen up, and I went upstairs to pack. One bag was all I needed. I hadn't amassed much in the way of belongings over the summer. Most of what I'd be taking, I realized, were memories carefully collected and stored inside me. For no apparent reason, a surge of tears brimmed my eyes. The door opened.
Stella, Carmina said gently.
I drew my sleeve across my eyes. I'm okay. Really, I'll be fine. Everything will be fine, I blubbered. This won't take long. I don't have much to pack. I've hardly gained anything.
I glanced at the meager spread of clothes I'd placed on my bed. My yellow sundress, the boots Carmina had made me, Chet's hat.
Funny, she said, sitting on the edge of the mattress. I was just thinking how much I've gained by having you here this summer. You were a blessing, Stella. I went to bed every night, my heart filled with a little more joy. I thank God for the time I had with you.
Unable to contain myself, I threw my arms around her.
Oh, Carmina, do you really want me to go?
I don't want you to go, she said, blinking but not fast enough to keep her eyes from dampening.
Oh, Stella, I don't want you to go. Can't you see that? Deep down, I don't think you want to go either.
I don't want to take care of my mom, but if I don't, who will? She'll never make it alone.
Her smile was sweet and sad. She bent my head to her shoulder and ran her worn, loving fingers over my hair.
Stella, if you leave, there is nothing stopping Danny Bilondo from finding you and your mother, she said gravely, the first note of concern seeping into her voice.
She may tell herself Boston isn't Philadelphia, but she's walking as close to the fire as she can without getting burned. Or so she tells herself. You can't get in that car with her. Do you understand? Legally, I can't stop her from taking you. She's your guardian, and as much as I don't want to, I have to follow the law.
Deputy Price and I can help you file for emancipation, but it will take time. If you go with your mom, the clock will work against us.
What are you saying I should do?
Go to Chet's. Go out the back door. Stay there until I come get you. Let me deal with your mother. I'll try to help her see the danger in her plan.
3 months ago, that's exactly what I would have done. Run away. Dodged my problems rather than solved them. Wished my mother away. Pretended she didn't exist, then resented her for doing just that. Running away hadn't worked 3 months ago, and it wouldn't work now. For once, I had to be honest, and show her how strong I'd become. I needed to tell her I wasn't going to Boston, and I hoped she didn't either. If she really wanted to try to make things work between us, she had to finish rehab. I knew it wasn't the be-all and end-all, but it was a step, a show of good faith.
No. I should be the one to tell her, I said.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Carmina squeezed my hand.
Do you want me to come with you?
I shook my head, no. My mom would be more defensive if she thought this was Carmina's idea. I moved down the staircase, my hand slick on the worn banister, feeling the weight of each footfall. I didn't know how my mom would react. Or maybe I did. And that's why my legs felt watery and my stomach tight. I tempered the feeling of nerves and dwindling confidence and entered the living room to see my mom bent over Carmina's purse.
What are you doing? I sputtered.
She jumped. In one swift movement, her hand was out of the purse and in her own pocket. When she turned, her smile was as smooth and sweet as candy.
Hi, sweetheart. What did you put in your pocket?
Listen, darling, I was thinking we could stay in the city tonight, play tourists through the weekend, then start looking for an apartment in the suburbs the following.
What did you put in your pocket? I demanded, striding forward. I tried to grab her, but she swatted my hand away.
Don't touch me, Estella. I don't like the way you're looking at me.
What did you take from Carmina's purse?
I thought I dropped a hairpin.
Money? Is that what you took?
My voice was edged with anger. So you can buy drugs? I knew you didn't clean up. Too easy.
I could have kicked myself for believing her.
No, for wanting to believe. We were rewinding the clock. My mom was back to being a fountain of lies. I was back to being undeserving of any respect.
You checked out early because you couldn't go another day without getting high.
Hush, Estella. My mom snapped,
Don't you say those things about your own mother. It's not nice. You stole from Carmina. My jaw was quivering. After everything she's done for me, she took me in when no one else wanted me.
I wanted you, baby, she began, reaching for me.
I threw my hands up, shielding myself. Stop it. Just stop. I closed my eyes, tears squeezing out. You have to leave. You need to go. Back to rehab. Somewhere else, I don't care. But you're leaving, and I'm not going with you. I felt ill. My knees were doing a poor job of holding me up, but I had to keep it together and get her out. It was the only thought drumming in my head. I gripped the wall, trying to flush out the worst of the nausea. I didn't want to remember all those times I'd come home to find her lying in a puddle of vomit, her skin blue, her pupils tiny pinpricks. I'd wonder if she was dead. Secretly hope she was. I need you, baby. Her voice cracked. Stop. Leave. Please. Just go. I was begging now. Her eyes were wet. But all those nights before, her eyes had been dry. She'd stared vacantly at her bedroom ceiling, and I'd pulled off her shoes and covered her in blankets, then watched over her through the night. Would she live? What would become of me? I'd spent hours pondering those questions. For years now, I'd taken care of her. I'd wanted to believe I was helping her. It had taken coming to Thunder Basin to see the truth. I wasn't helping anyone, least of all her. The longer I protected her, the more people she would hurt.
I can't go alone, she whispered, her face a blotchy mix of pink and translucent white. In that moment, she really did look like a child, small and frightened. If you stay, I'll tell Carmina.
You can't do this to me. I won't let you steal from Carmina. My mom made a bewildered sound.
Where will I go?
If you're smart, back to rehab. Now her eyes flashed. Don't look at me like that. Don't judge me. Don't stand there all self-righteous and look down at me. You have no idea what it was like for me. I kept the perfect house. I hosted the best parties. I made his friends laugh. I gave him a beautiful baby girl. I did everything right, and he left me.
Her voice was inflamed, bordering on hysterical. In the next moment, it tumbled to weeping despair.
It wasn't supposed to be like this. I had dreams. I had.
She covered her face with her hands.
I have nothing. It's all gone, she sobbed. If you leave me too, what will happen to me?
My head was pounding. I didn't want her to have this power over me, to draw me in, then cast me away, then suck me back in. I hated being caught in her tide. I'd spent years at its mercy, feeling moments away from capsizing. And then I'd come to Thunder Basin. The tide had receded. This summer had been a secret treasure. A guilty, selfish, gratifying escape. I'd been a fool to think it would last. Carmina was right. Our pasts were hitched to us. We couldn't outrun them. I felt the tide tugging at my heels, but this time I would not surrender to it. She was my mom. I wanted her to get better. Deep down, I cared about her. But I had to remember that she was the mother, not the other way around. I couldn't make her do anything.
You need to leave.
I pushed the words out from someplace deep inside. A stronger version of myself was speaking now.
You can't do this.
I can't protect you anymore. I can't lie.
I wanted to confront her about Reed, too, but given everything else, her relationship with him seemed insignificant. I let it pass. But I would not ignore that she wasn't better, wasn't ready to be my mom again. Her face blank, she turned to the door. I shut my eyes and listened to her uncertain steps moving farther away. My chest was painfully tight. I felt a heavy loss inside me that was both sorrow and relief. The door shut behind her, and I sank to the floor. The drag of the tide released me. The setting sun dragged away the day's heat, and as I rocked in Carmina's porch swing, drinking a glass of her sweet tea, the night air felt almost balmy as it whispered over my skin. The weather was changing, shifting toward autumn. Summer was drawing to an end. So was my time here, in this quiet, beautiful refuge. Tomorrow was coming, and it was painful to think about. Tomorrow meant change. It meant saying goodbye, starting from scratch all over again. When I tried to imagine where Deputy Price would take me, what my new bedroom would look like, what my new job would be, everything went blurry. I wanted to stay here. I wasn't ready to leave. Part of me, a very small, unrealistic part, daydreamed about what it would be like to stay permanently, to make Thunder Basin my home. But even if Trigger hadn't jeopardized my cover, could I ever feel satisfied here? Or would I grow bored, restless, and resentful? More importantly, could I make a life here when I'd lied to everyone? No. No, I could not. I had to be realistic. It was time to move on. Sooner than I'd planned, but guess what? That was life. I could cry over it, or I could be a big girl and tough it out. I tucked my knees to my chest and drank in the candy-like fragrance of the August lilies. A swollen yellow moon drifted on the horizon. It could have swallowed 10 Philadelphia moons. It was that large. Crickets sang in the bushes, lulling me until I felt heavy and drowsy. The screen door squeaked, and Carmina's boots sounded on the wood planks. "Look at you, lazy as a pet coon." I smiled up at her, raising my glass. "Your tea is really good. I wish I'd thought to have you teach me the recipe. Now it's too late." Carmina took a moment to answer. "Don't fall asleep out here. You'll give the mosquitoes a feast." I eyed her denim skirt and starched blouse. "Where are you going?" "Bible study. I'll be home by 10. "Don't come back early on account of me." "I'll go to Bible study, and then I'll come directly home, like I always do," she said practically. "Or you could ask Pastor Likens out for a drink." She narrowed her eyes in disapproval. "Pastor Likens doesn't drink." "Then invite him over for tea." "All the caffeine, he wouldn't sleep a wink. You shouldn't be drinking it this late either." "Trust me, if Likens comes over, he won't want to sleep. I've seen the way he looks at you. He might not drink with those holy lips, but I bet he uses them to..." I made obnoxious smooching noises. "Stella," she chided, then continued on her way, but not before I saw pink stain her cheeks. "You only live once. Bring him home, and I swear I'll stay out of the way. You won't even know I'm here." "Why would I care if you're here?" "Oh, Carmina," I tossed my hands in the air. "You're hopeless." "Good night, Stella. Behave yourself while I'm gone." "Not if I have anything to say about it," I called as she climbed into the truck. She waved me off, and I watched her taillights bounce down the road. I sprawled in the porch swing, feeling the caffeine from the tea stir my blood. I wasn't in the mood to watch TV. I felt restless and uncontainable. It was a perfect night. Fat moon, a sea of stars, just the right amount of heat rising off the ground. A good night to take care of long-delayed business. Upstairs, I changed into my swimsuit and twisted my hair into a high bun. Glancing in the mirror, I noted my mom was right. My skin was honey brown, almost the same shade as my eyes. And my arms and legs were toned, shapely. Even my shoulders had muscle definition. A summer's worth of shuttling trays of food would do that. I thought of my best friend, Tori, and all the hours we'd spent scrutinizing ourselves in the mirror. Front pose, side pose, glancing over the shoulder pose. Our ideal body had been long, lanky, and as iridescent as a pearl.
We dieted religiously, and we never worked out, because we didn't want to bulk up. A slow smile dawned on my reflection. I'd been clueless. Or maybe my perception had shifted. Either way, I liked the image before me. I felt strong, confident, and newly discovered. Since I hadn't brought my cover-up from home, I tugged on a pair of frayed denim shorts and looped a towel around my neck. Then I headed to Chet's. For nearly 3 months, our lives had intersected, each of us spinning madly around the other like planets in orbit. How did you break that kind of gravitational force without someone getting hurt? This morning, I'd considered leaving with my mom. No painful goodbyes. Cut my losses and run. It was easier to leave than be left. Without realizing it, I had slipped into Estella's tough, impenetrable armor. This perfect summer with the perfect guy? Wouldn't last. Nothing ever did. Fold while you were ahead. Damn everyone else. But when I'd nearly left with my mom, I wasn't worried Chet was a summer fling. I was terrified he was more. A moment later, I was on his porch. He answered my knock, standing shirtless and barefoot before me. His damp hair hung in his eyes, and he smelled of soap and late-night coffee. He leaned a hard, sculpted arm on the door jamb and peered down at me. "I'm sorry about last night," I said. "It was unfair of me to shut you out. Can we put it in the past? Can we be friends again?" The tension went out of those strong, set shoulders. Never stopped. My smile was part relief, part hopeful. "Wanna go swimming?" He studied me, his eyes keenly fixed on mine, as if he saw something in them I myself wasn't aware of. His face changed, grew discerning. I wondered if he could sense the strange, restless stirring inside me, or read the thoughts burned on my mind. Thoughts of him. The hard grip of his hands, the solid press of his body, the pressure of his mouth tasting mine, his breath, rough and hot in my ear, the unquenchable ache in me that only he could satisfy. He didn't bother to change out of his jeans. He took my hand and led the way. And that's when I knew the urgent stirring in my blood wasn't mine alone. I stood on the dock at the edge of the swimming hole, watching Chet monkey walk up the thick sloping tree trunk that jutted over the water. A ribbon of moonlight ran to shore, and I slapped at mosquitoes whining in my ears. At the top of the tree, Chet reached into the leafy branches and took a rope in both hands. Feeding it no slack, he maneuvered his feet onto the side of the trunk, putting himself in a position to rappel down. With a forceful push, he sprang and dropped, sailing over the swimming hole in a graceful crescent. When his heels swung above the deepest part of the swimming hole, he let go of the rope, plunging into the water, but not without first letting out an enthusiastic whoop. His head resurfaced and he shook his hair like a dog would.
"Water feels great."
Bending my knees, I dove off the dock, squeezing my eyes tightly as that first blast of cool liquid electrified my skin. After a few underwater strokes, I came up for air. The water was deep. I had to tread to stay afloat. Chet was a couple of feet away, doing likewise. Slowly, slowly, he swam closer. I didn't move, shivering with excitement. His eyes were alert and hungry, and it made my body pulse with a wild, reckless thrill. I felt the seductive whisper of his fingertips brush my stomach, a tempting, teasing underwater touch that made every nerve ending dance and burn. I searched for his hand in the murky water. His fingers locked around my wrist, reeling me close. In the cool water, his skin shed heat. It licked up my body, dissolving my fears, my heartache, and all the guilt that had been yoked to my shoulders. This was why I'd gone to Chet tonight. I needed him. I felt his heart pounding, urgent and alive. He needed me, too. I'd made up my mind. I wasn't leaving Thunder Basin without sharing something real with him, a true part of myself. No more pretending to be someone I wasn't.
I was ready to exorcise the past and give him the real me. My legs tangled with his. I felt his strong, powerful kicks churning the water. His knee slipped between my thighs and it made the breath go out of me. "It's deep," I said, my toes scraping cool, empty nothingness. But I wasn't sinking underwater. I was sinking into Chet, floating weightlessly as his mouth found my throat, nipping and grazing, each taste causing a riot of heat to stir my blood faster. I clutched his hair and arched backward, my knees coming to rest on his thighs. The water rushed everywhere, a potent contrast of cool and heat. Chet held me up, that wet mouth roaming lower. My breath caught as his tongue teased the elastic of my swim top. I felt myself go hard in some places, melting in others. Only half aware, I realized this was pleasure. Selfish, greedy, wondrous pleasure. We bumped against the dock, the post hard at my back. He looked straight into